Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Working Title. I'm Ryan Pring with the BitLife Show. This week we have Joseph Fulton on, a good longtime friend of our Jeffrey Bell.
Yeah!
This guy. And current assistant editor out in LA. And he's kind of the other side of the coin. We stayed here and made production work in the Midwest. And he went out there and started at the PA level and continued to work himself up. And now he's an assistant editor on Mike and Molly. Everyone wants to, at some point, be the director, be the writer, or be the creative head. But once you can actually figure out what you want to do, that's when you're really able to start walking that path. And it certainly helps to be able to see that in action, to see a director, to see a cinematographer, to see an editor, to see a producer, to see, you know, any of those roles actually in action. And so we talk a little bit more about that on today's episode. Do the thing.
All right, everybody.
Well, we'll now actually have our heart open and welcome. Was it Joseph Fulton?
Yes,
right?
You can call me Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for coming. Yay! Tell us a little bit about yourself.
He's my friend.
Who are you?
My name is Joe. I've been best friends with Jeff Bell since second grade.
I'm so sorry.
I've had to pay him so much money.
Your lunch money.
Why do you think I'm broke?
Joe, you must have a lot of dirt on Jeff.
Yes.
Or
he's
has
paid
dirt
me not
on
to
you,
say it, though,
maybe.
So it's worked.
Maybe he's got dirt on you.
How much is the question?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do have. Remember that time in high school, Joe? There seems to be lipstick and a dress involved.
No, I don't, actually.
I have the photo. Sorry, that conversation.
That happened in high school, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you just did that like a week ago.
Yeah, that was. We do it once every decade.
Yeah, that's weird.
So it happens now.
So you guys grew up together.
Yeah, we grew up together in Janesville and went to elementary school together. Not middle school.
No.
But then also high school.
Was that a choice?
He needed to get away.
Yeah, I just went to the one across town. And but ironically, when we then merged to the same high school, and this will sort of go into the hopefully topics we're going to discuss, when we went to high school, all of our friends from our separate middle schools came together, and they recognized, they would walk down the halls and say to me, "You're the guy from Jeff's videos."
Yeah.
And they would say to him, "You're the guy from Joe's videos." Yeah. Because basically every project that
in
was
middle
sort
school.
Of like, do a project, a presentation in middle school, I would say, well, can I do a video?
And I did the same.
And the friend that I had that wanted to help me with the videos was Jeff. And we would basically do the videos on the weekend, and I would edit them and take them to school. And this was probably like maybe 3 videos per school year. But still, it was enough to...
It got to the point where people recognized
because
they just assumed that I was going to do a video, and I'm sure they did the same thing for you, and it was, we were always in each other's videos enough to the point where they're just like, oh yeah, they knew we were going to be in it, and they knew it was coming, and we did.
What was the best one you did? In your opinion.
This might have even been high school.
The Spanish one?
Yes. I don't remember. It's probably high school.
It sounds infamous.
The project was basically...
Love it. Write it's jokes.
Right, well... Not everyone did a video, but like it was like it was write a drama or a script and then perform it. And I said, "Can I do a video?" And
or whatever that is in Spanish.
I basically wrote a telenovela.
Yes.
And Sábado Domingo.
Exactly. Yeah. And also wrote commercials to play because I was like, it was probably 15, maybe 10. So it was a fairly long but short video.
For the record, I took French.
Yes, Jeff took French. Basically,
this is for Spanish
class. I
wrote
a script. The teacher approved it, and I filmed it. And it was, I think, maybe my brother or like a neighbor also helped. But basically, it was me and Jeff, and maybe we had a maybe this is the hair and the lipstick.
And we wore a lot of costumes.
You know, someone had to see the
was
woman.
That a several time occurrence?
They were costumes. We did not cross-dress. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just we didn't do that. That's not what this was about.
It was in character.
We totally
it was
for
just in character
for a show.
That's right.
So
that's what
I
they say in Hollywood,
had a telenovela,
right?
And then there was the commercials. But the reason I bring up the commercials is because it's cool. But also, just one day Jeff was just doing the commercial, and just I don't know Spanish. I'm a French speaker, native English speaker. I can't. And
don't
he just
stop.
Turns to the camera and goes, "Chips,"
because I didn't know what the Spanish word was. Chips.
What?
And you did outtakes.
And then at the end, there was the outtakes.
And all you did is, like, I think 2 or 3 times in that video, you cut to me just doing chips and then cutting away from it. And that was it. So that was a joke for the longest time. It was just me turning the camera, just chips.
Yeah.
I'll do it here too. Chips! Now we have a 4K version of me doing chips.
So in middle school, is that where that started with you guys and your yeah. love of it, or was it before that? Or
I found, or my parents said, you need something to entertain yourself with. Here's a camera.
Like, leave us alone.
Yeah, as all
like,
good parents
no way.
They gave me this camera that they had received for their wedding present years before.
They're like, here, film it.
So this is the 90s now that they go, here's a camera. And the camera was old enough that it didn't have a tape deck in it. You couldn't put cassette tapes in it. It was a shell. It was a body. And there was a cord that then went to the VCR that came with the camcorder. And you would plug that into the input and press record on the VCR.
Sure, right.
We need to specify that cord was literally
It was about 2 feet.
That was it.
And it went to the back of the VCR.
Because there was no
So is that just shape. RCA cables? RCA right into the...
I mean, it was one cable. So I think it was... it might have been RCA.
But it did video brand. And audio or
brand.
Just...
It did video and audio, it was that camera was specifically designed to go into that VCR. It wasn't.
Oh, sure.
You couldn't bring it now and plug it in with your.
That was technology ahead of its time. Instead of technology that just worked, you know, by itself, which everything now you need all these other parts in order for anything to work.
Yeah.
Work.
But I mean, like you think about it, like this was even before like the giant camcorders that had the VHS tapes plugged, like which that is almost ridiculous to think about those huge cameras. It was before that because there was no.
Well, they would have before that. They would have had beta. They would have beta before that.
I mean, it was my beta recorder. The camera itself was about this big and probably weighed less than 10 pounds.
Yeah, because
that was probably cutting edge though.
It was a tiny little thing.
1980 something.
Yeah.
I mean, they had Hi8 and all that, so that was already out, and we had this, or at least it was coming out recently, or. Shortly thereafter, Jeff wasn't there when I first got my hands on it, and then like the next weekend he like came over to hang out, and I was like, well, I have this thing that records video and audio at the same time. It's very interesting.
This video camera.
So it hooked up to the one VCR, which was in the corner of my parents' basement.
So it was like plays. In your basement.
Exactly.
Yes. And like you were able to record.
When the camera was faced this way at this zoom level, that's a living room.
Yep.
And when it's this way, that's a doctor's office.
Yep.
And when it's this way, it's zoomed out a little bit more, that's the outside.
Nice. Yep. Nice. And then when it was this way and it was zoomed really in, that was the second room that was behind the couch.
Yeah, there was
was the living room.
Yeah. There was a bar, too.
It was a bar, but we just zoomed in really close to that. That was a new location.
Mind you, this was on
horrendous.
A VCR, so everything was shot linear. It was just like, scene one.
Yeah.
And then stop.
We ad-libbed a lot.
Had you like crawl over to the VCR and
did you ever
stop.
Get fancy enough to edit? Did you do a VCR to VCR?
Did not do that, but eventually...
We tried taping stuff off the VCR.
A few years later, my dad, we had bought a computer and had Windows Movie Maker on it. And I would put the tape in a VCR and record it onto the camera.
Yeah,
or onto
you
the computer.
Capture it onto the computer.
And that's when I first started editing. Mm. This was, I think I was 7th or 8th grade at the time. And this was the first thing we ever shot non-linear. And I started to edit it. And I was like, this is really fun. Like, this is what I enjoy. I enjoyed putting the puzzle together. So in 8th grade, I decided I wanted to be a video editor.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Eventually,
and it stuck.
In my life. And I've been pursuing that
at middle school.
Since. Yeah.
People are usually just, you know, I want to be that, you know, even before that and then up till middle school. And then you realize, oh my gosh, I got to be something useful.
Yeah.
And that story is very true. And it's come in handy in a lot of job interviews because I guess people don't want people who are like, I don't know what I want to do.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. Isn't that not the person you want to hire?
Yeah.
Right?
So.
Now, what was that piece that you edited for the first time on? And Ellie?
For what I remember, it's probably true because I remembered it. It was
totally not scripted.
I'm never wrong.
It was an episode of a television show that Jeff and I created. And it was based off of a TV show from much earlier called The Odd Couple. And we called it The Strange Couple. So
I see what you did there.
Jeff and I were like, I mean, back, you know, years before, like, it's you and me. What can we do? And Jeff's like, there's this TV show that was on many years ago called The Odd Couple.
Do you remember that blackmail we were discussing earlier?
Yes.
This tape works for both of us.
Gotcha. That's kept you bonded all these years.
Maybe at some point that needs to come in.
There will probably be a clip.
Maybe I will. Forget it. I'll just throw a clip up of it.
I mean, that's how you have to start. You have to start with imitation because you don't know what the heck you're doing. You know, so you gotta find something.
I mean, so the first episode we ever did of that was, I think it was pretty similar to the first one of The Odd Couple. Was Jeff basically knocked on the door of Joe, and said, "Hey, I'm moving in." And,
yep.
Nice.
And it was like, okay, well, what do you want to do? Well, let's go to the bar or go to outside
and,
or
and
the doctor's
office.
And what
was that? Was that like late 70s or early 80s, The Odd Couple? When was that?
That was 70s.
Remember? Okay, yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
from
that
the attire.
Yeah, just based upon the clothing and the set.
Yeah.
I feel like that was the 70s and the theme song.
That's yours.
But like that whole thing was, and then like we did have enough thought to like tweak the concept of the show.
So
like,
instead of Felix, the one character was named Oscar.
Yeah.
Or wait. Was
no,
it
yeah, it was Oscar and Grover for
Oscar
a while.
And Grover was our names.
And that even changed. And then Bob.
You're like,
Bob
come up
and
with
Fred.
Something. I don't know. I just watch Sesame
Bob
Street every day. So.
All right. Fred
as
or
a
Bob.
High Fred schooler.
Or Bob. Because that and like because it kept changing because we didn't even know our characters' names for like the first six episodes and
the real show was Felix and Oscar and so we were Grover
and Fred and Grover
and I was
Grover. Or Bob
anyway so fast forward to non-linear editing and the same episode of The Strange Couple had evolved to.
We actually
time
kind of
travel. I think
yes,
it was.
We did
a time travel episode.
We found a VHS tape that allows us to time travel.
Well, and once you've mastered the sitcom, you got to go somewhere new.
We go sci-fi.
Yeah,
not quite jump the shark yet, but just go farther. So, in true Jeff and Joe fashion, we modeled that episode after an episode of The Simpsons in which Homer goes back in time and like
our
steps
Halloween
on a twig,
episode.
Steps on a twig or something, and then he returns and like. There are no donuts in the world, but then when he leaves, you find out donuts are what it rains donuts or something.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So you go back in time, do one thing, and it affects a butterfly effect. Where it was
it was
so an old Simpsons
what was your
episode.
What was your object? What happened?
We went in time, and I went back in time, and I threw an aluminum can away. In prehistoric times.
Oh,
and then I go back.
Yeah,
and
that's bad. Yeah,
I never lived with him or something or.
Yeah, it wasn't me. It was somebody else.
Yeah,
we got your brother.
Ripple.
We got your brother in one of those flashbacks
was
when he
younger.
Was
younger.
You said you went to prehistoric time.
Yeah.
Did you film out a window? Or did you have to like move the whole cons like?
It was in the backyard because we had moved beyond being.
Oh, you weren't.
We updated the camera at that point.
Cut the cord.
This was on high eight or something.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it was my parents' backyard against the fence.
Nice.
And that was the past.
The forest or trees.
You know, when the dinosaurs and cavemen built red picket fences back in the day.
I mean, it's a fern. It's a kind of fern.
Because this
it's
was pre-driver's license, so we had to. We were not hooked to the VCR, just hooked to the general neighborhood.
The neighborhood instead.
And the park was like a mile, and that would take
forever.
Yeah,
we don't want to go that far. No, not for this one shot.
Yeah.
Because we still kind of shot linearly, I think. Like, or I think we still kind of shot it in order
in
some cases.
In the style of the sitcom we had perfected.
Yes,
because
this was what we did. Why would we change that?
Right.
The
award winning.
The award winning. Oh my goodness.
The award winning never to
describe,
be seen ever again. Wink, wink.
Wink,
describe
wink.
For us too, for those who don't know what it is, the difference between linear, filming or editing, and non-linear.
Well, linear is just shooting it in the order that it's written, mm-hmm. and not adjusting that at all.
Some movies still do that. Every once in a while, you'll find a movie that'll actually shoot that way. But
generally,
stuff doesn't shoot that way.
Yeah.
Well, and isn't the Steenbox, the reel to reel, isn't that linear? Because you are at one point and you do that edit, and then you go to the next point and you do the next edit. So there's really no going back. You can go back and resplice, but for the most part, you're just moving forward linearly. So you got to have a really good plan.
Right. Yeah.
And then nonlinear.
Is you're shooting things out of order and bringing them in and picking and choosing. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you're doing different takes at this point.
Sure.
You have options.
Yeah.
Options? What are those? We don't have that sort of stuff for this show.
Now, what do you do professionally?
Right now, I'm an assistant editor, and I work on a TV show called Mike and Molly.
Nice.
And
you've been there for a few years now, haven't you? Or two seasons?
I've been working there since February of 2014.
Oh.
But this is the second season.
I was way off with IMDb. Okay, well that might be why.
That's
why I've worked on two separate seasons so far.
Oh, okay.
And it's been great.
Yeah, so how did you get in? Like, how did you go from Janesville, Wisconsin, to editing TV in? Do you live in LA or?
Yeah, I live and work in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And after I graduated high school, I went to college and I knew I wanted to be an editor. Mm-hmm. So I enrolled in a television and radio program, and I basically took every editing class I could when it was available. And after I graduated college, I knew I wanted to work in some capacity, and I applied everywhere. And really, the only interview I got was in Los Angeles. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and I'd heard.
Oh, that's great.
I'd heard it was a love or hate it city, and you had to be there to know if you love it or hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd already packed, sort of put my belongings in my parents' house of like stays at mom's basement. Goes into my car because I need it, and it's clothes or something. Mm-hmm. And if it fits in my little Geo Prism, I will take it along. Otherwise, it stays in mom's basement. And I packed it up and moved to Los Angeles and began working in there, and then just made contacts and blah blah blah. I guess
what
that's
was the first thing you worked on?
Yeah, what was that?
Yeah.
So I had interviewed with a few places, and the first job I had, I worked in basically the accounting department for all the television shows at Warner Brothers Studios, mm-hmm. Which was great. And it was like a 9-to-5 basically job, gave me enough money to get by out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more expensive than out here. And,
a little bit.
But it was great because I got to deliver paperwork around the Warner Brothers Studios every day. And I got to meet people that worked on every show that Warner Brothers was doing, basically every show.
Oh, wow, yeah.
They were just the accountants. They weren't like the producers of the show or anything like that. Or,
oh, okay.
But I knew someone who knew someone that worked on the show.
Sure.
You know, I knew people that did work on the show, but they knew all the producers because they would contact with them. So they were able to, if I needed to, you know, pass my resume along to someone who might be interested in hiring me, please. I worked there for a year.
You literally became one of those people in Kevin Bacon's Six Degrees.
Right.
Just saying. Just throwing that out there. It's that whole, I know a person who knows a person who knows Kevin Bacon.
Hey, I'm two degrees.
I do.
I was like three, I think, at one point.
I guess is
not
it,
through
it's
you.
One person in the middle, that's 2 degrees, right? So
yeah.
I'm 2 degrees now.
Which means so I'm 3 degrees.
Then I'm three.
But I worked there for a year at the accounting department. Mm-hmm. And then somebody hired me onto a pilot of a show. Which is a pilot is mm-hmm. when you do the first one and the network then decides based on the finished product if they like it or not and if they want to put it on the air.
Which is a good rule of thumb because generally like if people who watch like TV shows on Netflix or on the DVD box sets and like the first episode it's always called pilot and you always watch that and you're like,
this has nothing to do with airplanes.
No. Yeah, why does this, this not look like anything else the show ever became? It's you know, probably because of those cases where the studio was like, oh, or whoever was like, oh, would we like this? But we need to tweak it.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, the locations are different a lot, you know, sometimes. Right. Or the look of even the actors have changed between the pilot.
And they don't reshoot that pilot. They
no.
Don't
put, it's that's the first
right.
episode.
And something I'm curious about, because I just read the other day that directors who do pilots, they essentially get, you know, license or royalties.
Right.
You know, they might not shoot even the first episode of the show, but because they shot the pilot, they get royalties. Does that happen with the rest of the production, post-production and editing and or do you get like 5 cents a week if your show?
I think only it's definitely just directors and probably the creator or producer.
Okay.
If they're not hired back, they will see money from if the series goes on. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't work on anything else, I don't know if it's anyone else, but it's definitely not the office production assistant who happens to be copying and handing out scripts.
It's not everybody
at night. That's
Joe. I feel like you know a person that would have been that.
The whole thing would fall apart without that, though.
Yes,
they'd wake up and they wouldn't have their scripts. So
yes,
actually, the entire thing would have fallen apart that day.
Yeah. So then, from there,
it was just more contacts and networking and mm-hmm. job search and. And found another job that lasted for 3 or 4 months and then moved on to something else that lasted for 3 or 4 months and then mm-hmm. found something that was supposed to last a year but only lasted 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Is that 3 or 4 months thing, is that a common thing? Like just generally for like starting out?
The first show that I worked on that lasted more than 2 weeks was called Pushing Daisies.
Oh yeah.
Let's talk about Pushing Daisies.
Julia hates that show, so we need to talk about.
Oh.
No.
I was the office production assistant, and that's basically someone who works in the production office. And production is sort of in charge of booking crew and equipment.
Okay.
And just sort of making sure things stay on schedule. You know, there's the they work really closely with the directors, or the assistant directors, I should say, who say, oh, yeah, we're going to do these pages, and so we're going to need this.
The people.
So make it happen.
And then, you know, the camera department, oh, we're going to need a big dolly or a jib or something like that. You can see how much I've forgotten already.
These are all technical terms. Don't mind yourself with any of these.
So, but
and some, what was it, lighting?
Yeah. So, again, I was
kind of important.
Doing copying scripts and other paperwork and handing out things and distributing. There would be schedules, just keeping everybody in the loop and sending emails also with the schedules attached and things like that. Kind of forget what I used to do over there. But
that was the first time I came
probably
out to
a
see
lot.
You.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot of different responsibilities, you know, to make make everything work. And, you know, each day it's probably different.
Yeah, there was...
did a lot of running.
Yeah, there was lots of runs. I was answering phones,
things
of that nature, and just directing phone calls to various people or taking messages. Sounds not that glamorous, and it wasn't super glamorous, but...
But you're, again, you're a significant cog, as it were, like, you know...
I'm a cog. It's a small cog.
Things don't happen.
Yeah.
You know?
And there was three of us there, and then we had our two supervisors as well. So there's five people doing that, and we're working in conjunction with all the other departments on the show. I mean, there's 100 to 150 people that work on a show like that, from the writing staff to grips and people that work the cameras and people that move the dollies that the cameras sit on.
Right. Now, was this right before the show got canceled? Or
yeah, I worked in the last season of Pushing Daisies.
We used to joke.
Sad. It was
Can
genius.
We resurrect that? Yeah. That was my favorite.
The year before that was the strike season, and it was supposed to be a full season.
Yeah.
And it was 13.
Yeah.
And I don't really remember if we were ordered for a full season or a half season, but we only did like 9 or something. So there was only 22 episodes of its entire run.
Okay.
But I always remember that the show won like 7 Emmys.
Right, right.
So it won like an Emmy for every 3 episodes on the air, which is a pretty good track record. And so I think it had won 3 or 4 the year before I was there, and then it won like 2 or 3 for the season I'd been on.
Now, when network or station and what night was it on? Because I watched it after the fact.
It was ABC.
It was ABC. It was through Warner Brothers Television.
Oh, man.
It was Monday.
I think it was a Tuesday. It was Tuesdays.
I never saw it on. Only 22 episodes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Of the whole season.
Where was Netflix back then?
Yeah.
Because Netflix would have picked it up.
Nowadays, I feel like Netflix would have. They would have grabbed it. Because that's very much so one of those kind of creative, visually entertaining shows.
Well, a very unique show, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of like Firefly. Like, who saw Firefly when it aired? Pretty much no one, and it aired out of order. And then afterwards, people saw it and were like, oh, this is genius.
Yeah.
But it was like, already canceled a year and a half ago. Or, you know, that was my experience with Pushing Daisies. Like, I think I did watch it on Netflix, but it was several years later. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when was that? When was it canceled?
2007? Eight?
No, 2008.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So it was probably maybe 2011 or 12 or something that I saw it. You know, just kind of came across it and, you know, loved it and got to the end and was like, what? What
I got to see them make three of those episodes.
The whole so thing. Jealous.
You're there.
That was a fun time out there. I don't know how much of that story
was.
I can
it
tell.
A fun like group?
Anything about that?
Like, was it fun to make Pushing Daisies?
Oh, it was a blast.
Like,
it was great. I mean, I left that show because it was canceled.
And you didn't want to stick around for a while.
You're like, no, I'm like, leaving.
I was like,
I don't care that you're
keep
canceled.
Going.
I'm leaving.
Keep going.
Yeah, everyone on that show was a blast to be around. I don't want to make it sound like we didn't do any work, but like it was just great to. I would go down to stage sometimes, and everyone was very nice and happy. Mm-hmm. Everyone loved it because it was such a creative show, and just everything was just great about it. That everyone loved it, and I was like, this is what working in TV is like. Mm-hmm. Everyone is the best person to be around, and not saying that isn't true. Just like that was probably one of the. Top
was
two
it like
or three
an exception?
I was going to say that's a great a terrible first impression.
Right. Well, like the you know other shows that were done, people were not as happy.
Yeah.
Or they were so nice to be around. Like no one's really ever been unpleasant on a daily basis that I've worked with. I could say that about most people I've worked with in Los Angeles.
You.
But but like that was just like joking. That set the bar very high.
Yeah,
and
right.
It took me like a couple more shows of working to like realize
that maybe that it was special.
Yeah, it was a little special.
Which is sad then to think that ABC canceled it because it really shouldn't have canceled it.
Yeah, so I wonder, I wonder what was the, who was the target, the demographic with that time slot and
people
all that
lived
stuff,
in 2011 was the target.
Women, apparently, yeah.
Women like, my age, apparently, because I knew a lot of people who watched it.
Yeah.
It
was a good while show. It was on?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I watched it while it was on.
Man, I didn't, I never heard of it.
I remember seeing a trailer for it before they released it in the theaters. Like, it was like right when movie theaters started putting commercials before the films.
Yeah.
I remember there being an advertisement for it because it looked like an advertisement for a movie.
A movie, right.
Like, it looked
like
a Barry Sonnenfeld movie that was coming out, not a TV show. Mm-hmm. And yeah,
it was beautiful.
It.
I mean, to me, it was one of the most beautiful love stories ever written on television. The fact that they couldn't touch led to so many beautiful, intimate moments. Mm-hmm. And my favorite was the car, when he built a car for her so they could put their hands in gloves and still, like, touch. It was so wonderful. Lee Pace was amazing.
The whole
the first episode where he brings her back and he's not supposed to and he wants to kill her and he can't because he's in love with her. Yeah, and then she's, it's so good.
So watch
Chenoweth,
it.
Yeah,
should, Pushing Daisies. Everyone should watch it.
Everyone should watch Pushing. If you want to cry every night, you watch Pushing Daisies, and you'll cry, and you'll feel so much better afterwards.
Or if you're already crying every night, for whatever reason, then doesn't matter.
Buy a bottle of booze,
cry,
and then continue to watch Pushing Daisies.
Cry about something lovely and beautiful and poignant and whimsical.
I should not be influencing anybody. Sorry.
So then the show got canceled.
Right.
And then people cried.
Then people cried.
Yeah.
And the good news is that obviously it won a lot of Emmys, and people hired people based on their work on that, and the creator Brian Fuller went on to do other things, and he's still successful. And I do know, like, the visual effects supervisor on that show, his name's Bill, and he did like all the Breaking Bad visual effects. And and those are also good.
Yeah,
but
the ones you don't realize are visual effects and stuff.
Yeah, he's posting a lot of stuff. I'm his Facebook friend still. And I've like,
An achievement.
Yeah, like I didn't really know because I wasn't watching Breaking Bad, and then I was catching up to it late, like in the fourth or fifth season.
And like, what's this show about drugs you're working on?
But I would like sketchy. See his like pictures. I was like, what is that? That's crazy. He didn't like put any spoilers up, so when spoilers happened, I
I don't think you need to cover your mouth if you just say that.
That's true.
I think you've lost the concept of the whole covering of your mouth.
So then you went to what happened next?
This is a long time ago. I remember recently after that, I ended up working my first job in reality television, which was a whole different ballgame.
On purpose?
Yeah, they said, do you want to work? And I said, yes.
Yeah. Well, so, I don't know. I mean,
you want a job.
Oh, it's like I just... Okay.
You might have a perception, you know, like I hate reality TV, and they're like, you want to do it? And you're like, oh, I guess so. Or you could be like, yes, I love it.
Oh, okay. You know. Yeah, I see where you're
also British.
I don't work in reality anymore. But it's just a different ball game. Mm-hmm. And
so, what was it like? Did you get a lot of notes from the producer saying this is the way we need it to go? Because I imagine they film a lot of stuff.
Yeah. What were you doing?
And then the story has to get told.
That job I was sort of an office PA / set PA. So,
okay.
They had scheduled shoot days and scheduled days off. So I was really only at this company for a week or two. But we would go in and...
That's long in L.A.
Right. I just remember because it was my first reality job.
Uh-huh.
And I was in there and, we were getting the equipment ready and recharging all the batteries and stuff. Not dissimilar to what I see happening around me here.
Yeah, hurry up. Is it charged?
We have enough cards.
So, and it was, we're scheduling out the next day we're going to go out and shoot, and we're going to load up the vans at 6:30 and be on the road at 7 and start shooting at 8 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And or possibly it was, we're going to shoot tomorrow and the scene involves a treadmill that has been set up. So can you and you go set up the treadmill?
It's like reality.
What?
Well, so real.
I mean, would you watch a reality show where
no.
a person got a treadmill delivered and then built the treadmill? And then it was like, I'm tired, I'm having a beer. Well, maybe you would. I don't know.
Yeah. It depends on who's doing
I guess they
it?
Call that like this old like house. Maybe where they're
if it was
like,
me.
That's right. That's the whole building. HGTV motto.
Boy, you know? I am tired of building this treadmill.
They'll watch while we build shit.
All right, people. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So I built a treadmill, which was cool. And then the next day, I went to set. We were filming the treadmill being delivered. Uh-huh. But I don't know exactly what exactly happened, but there was not an actor to deliver the treadmill. So I got to put on the delivery guy outfit and say, sign here.
Did you get the credit?
Don't know if there's a physical credit of me in it. I don't really remember.
Can we say what show it was?
You got to get some IMDb cred.
Yeah, I guess we could say what show
it is. Is that okay? Because it's out there for people to watch. I got to find it.
I don't know where it is. I got to find the episode. I haven't seen it since it aired, but I had to say, here, sign here, Mr. Simmons, for Gene Simmons Family Jewels.
And there's three episodes. That's on your IMDb page.
Can you show a picture?
I'll try to find the
video of, because I found it. I found it because when the show was on Netflix, I found the episode that you were in because I showed everybody. And I'm like, that's Joe. And actually everybody just went, that's Joe. And I'm like, that's what I was going to say.
You're like, wait, he's a delivery man? You're like, no.
No. And that ruins your perceptive of reality television, doesn't it? It's like, yes, because Joe cannot lift that heavy box. It's like, yeah.
Exactly. It took two of them. Well, there was another guy.
Wait, that's what ruined their perception?
It wasn't that Joe was delivering the box. It was like, yeah. I know he can't lift that box. That's a huge box.
There was another guy I delivered it with. So
So then after a week and a half, you had enough for 2 weeks. You're like, that's it. I can't handle Gene Simmons.
I think it was near the end of their thing, and they had hired someone else, or they'd canceled production, and then... the time the season came back or something like that. Sure. Or I sucked and they didn't want me back. I don't really remember.
Now, does that happen?
But
where they cancel?
I did get a new job like a month later. So they called me and I was like, I'm working. Sorry.
Nice. Yeah.
That could have been it.
That's probably what it was. You seem like a nice guy.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's peel back those onion layers, Joe. Let's get to the dirt.
I hate onions.
I can say that because I'm your friend.
There's no dirt.
He's not a dick.
Wow, that episode just got really awkward and quiet.
Wait, do onions, are they dirty on the inside?
They are.
What you're saying?
They're very dirty. They smell like feet, which is actually true. I was going to try to ad-lib something and make it sound stupid, but that actually came out as logical. I'm going to stop talking. You guys keep going.
So what did you do after that?
I worked on a couple pilots.
What was the transition into editing?
And what from when you went out there to now, like how long, what's the time frame so far?
This was a year and a half-ish. I had moved out there in the summer of 07, worked for a year, and then Pushing Daisies lasted that fall. Yeah. And this was December or January of, I guess that's 08, 09.
Uh-huh. What was your expectation? Were you like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm not editing yet? Or were you ecstatic? Like, yeah, I keep getting jobs.
I was pretty ecstatic. Like, I had heard it was tough to find work. Mm-hmm. And I think at this point, the most I'd gone without work was a month to...
Oh, wow.
To a month and a half-ish.
Wow.
And I was I was living in a place... I had moved at that point. That was good. I always said that when I moved out here... or when I wrote my autobiography, because no one will ever read that, the first chapter will be, when I moved to Los Angeles, I ended up finding a job very quickly and then found an apartment shortly thereafter. Thankfully, it was only a mile away. But I did live with a 65-year-old woman who had four birds in her two-bedroom apartment.
Does that not just sound like L.A. to you, though? Like, in my head, it's like, oh.
I went on
Craigslist. What, a 65-year-old woman with birds?
With birds.
That's what I picture when I think of L.A.
Crazy people living in L.A.
She had lived there for a while because she was older than me. And so the rent was, like, controlled or whatever it was. Like, they couldn't raise it by so much. So, like, I paid five-something or whatever, which in Los Angeles is really cheap.
That's cheap for here.
Yeah. Well, it was a one bedroom in a two bedroom. So the two bedroom itself was 1,000 to like 1,100. Mm-hmm. This was in Burbank, California. It was like a mile from work. I was like, this is very Midwest of me from Wisconsin.
Now, how did you find that? Was she like on the Craigslist, like looking for young male strapping figure?
No, I did go on Craigslist.
Also very LA.
I just typed in like the zip code or whatever. And the first place I was like, oh, this is a decent price because it was also like 500 or 600. Mm-hmm. And I like looked it up and it was in the city called Northridge, which if you go on Google Maps and look at it, it's 10 or 15 miles away from Burbank. And I was like, 10 or 15 miles, like, that's less than great. Janesville to next, not even Madison.
Yeah, but was that like an hour?
So in the email, I was like, hey, like, I just moved here. And this girl emailed me back. I even said, like, I have a job in Burbank. Like, I have income. I can afford to pay for an apartment. And she was like, oh, do you want to live here? Do you know how far away that is? I was like, yeah, it's like 10 or 15 miles. And I asked my friend who I was living with. I was like, like, what's this girl's deal? Like, does she not want me to move in with her because I'm a guy or, like, I just moved out here? He's like, no, you don't want to drive from Northridge to Burbank. Like, that'll take you, like, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Which I think in reality was more like it would take probably only 45 to an hour, but, like, you're sitting in traffic.
Sure. Could be a lot more.
So I was like, I emailed her back, like, no, I don't want to. I'll live at this place that's a mile away from where I work. But
with
I,
this other lady
and
her birds and wrinkles.
I'm not like that at all, but thank you for
and
putting
gray
that on.
Hair.
So, yeah, I was 22, and she was in her 60s, and I was like, it's a place for me to sleep at night, and that's it. That's all. I had parking and
don't have to sleep
to
in
sleep,
my car.
And I can afford it. And that's where I live now. And I lived there for a year. Sorry, what was the original question?
what was happened? Your first editing?
Oh, yes.
So between, I only lived there for a year. I got a job. I was working on TV shows. I was excited. I'd worked on two shows at the time. I was moving apartments. I got, you know, I was not having trouble finding work. Mm-hmm. So I was not downtrodden. I wasn't like, I'm not editing feature films right now or anything like that. So I was very content with life and happy, but when I would meet these potential bosses in interviews, they would say, "What do you want to do?" And a lot of people my age want to be writers. So when I say I want to be an editor, because I wanted to be an editor since eighth grade, they're very excited to meet sort of a refreshing look on life or a refreshing face. And
someone who's not a writer, not a director, not an actor.
Yeah, and not saying all wannabe writer, director, actors are pushy or anything like that, but like a lot of them tend to, well, I'm in the production office, but I want to be a writer, so I'm going to go see if I can hang out with writers all the time, or see if I can nudge my way in, or put my script on the table and walk away, or something like that. You know, maybe none of my friends have ever done anything like that, but I just, you know, I think that's
kind
production
of the
office coordinator's idea of what a go get 'em writer is going to do in an office, and really we're there to be professionals in work. So when I would meet with a lot of these potential bosses and they said they found out I wanted to be an editor and eventually they would hire me, they would remember that, and if the show was winding down or if they just knew it was sort of a slow week or whatever, hey, well, let me introduce you to people in post-production, et cetera, et cetera. So I was, even on my first show that I worked on full-time, Pushing Daisies, I met a couple of the editors and the assistant editors. And I talked about visual effects supervisor, who's sort of part of the editorial team, post-production team. So I was meeting all these people, and I was like, oh, this is exciting. I've met people who work in what I want to do.
Yay!
And then, so eventually I worked on I was not downtrodden, and I worked on a project at the, I guess it was the fall of 2009, so about a couple of years after I'd moved out there. And the show got canceled, unfortunately. Same network. Well, it was really the same person working in the production office.
Yeah,
the
that's right.
Kiss of death, if
They're
you
like,
will.
Told you.
And
what show was that?
That was a show called Hank, which had Kelsey Grammer, who you might know as Frasier.
Don't remember Hank though.
Don't remember it.
I do. Oh, because I was his friend.
It was five episodes, I think, aired.
Yeah, there wasn't much of that one.
No, nothing to. We can gloss over that if you like.
But
the boss on that show, my boss there, her name was Rosie, and she knew a guy who happened to be working on a pilot soon, and he needed a post-production assistant. And she knew I wanted to do post, and I had done good work for her. So she said, you know, I would recommend you to him. Do you want me to pass it on? I was like, yes. Move. Pass by the resume.
Do it.
Did you not hear? We got canceled.
Yeah,
I need
a
job.
Here's my script. All right.
Stop talking to me. Just leave.
So she introduced me via email to him, and you know, he brought me in and met me and hired me for 2 or 3 weeks, whatever it was.
For
another pilot. And so that was my first job in post-production. And I was very excited, and I was trying to learn as much as I can. So I was working in post-production. It was great. It was amazing. And I still had no reason to be downtrodden or anything. and that show ended up getting picked up, but by the time they actually said, we would like to pick the show up and create a series, you know, the boss had ended up going on another project and I found another job. And not that we were said, well, this show sucked, so we'd better go find new jobs. We're just sort of waiting for the next thing. And then the next thing came. And they had hired their own different crew onto it. But I was had worked in post. I was excited, and that was my first post production job. And I continued on, and actually that boss on that show is my boss today. So that's sort of interesting. Yes. Yeah. So he had remembered me, and when they were looking to hire, he had worked with me, and a couple other people on the show had worked with me, and they remembered me and called me up and want to work.
Of course, said no.
Yeah. How excited were you when you got that call? Because it's, you know, you're continuing to work yourself up, work your way up, and 2 years or, you know, 2.5 years or however long that was, that's still amazing before you even get close to what you want to do.
Yeah.
So when you got that call, the guy that you knew, like, hey, we want you to do some assistant, because you're an assistant editor, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. What was that like?
It was great. I was excited to.
You're just like, you're like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, play it off. Yeah,
hang up the phone and then just run around the block for 6 blocks, screaming. Yeah, naked. 6 blocks, yeah. Naked.
Screaming.
In LA, so that's pretty normal.
Again,
yeah,
nothing out of the ordinary.
Not weird at all.
Weird people.
So can you talk a little bit about the process? So you're moving now into an assistant editor, not lead editor. So what would that be on? Like, what's the difference between what you do on Mike and Molly versus what the lead editor would do?
Basically what I do, or my responsibilities are bringing things from the stage or the set into the editing room, the editing bay, and preparing it for the editor. And then anything that he says, this can go out somewhere else to whoever or so-and-so or what, the network or studio or whatever, that's my job as well. Okay. So there's everything getting to him, mm-hmm. ready for him to cut, and then when he's finished, putting it away. And then there's other things in between. I need some help with the sound work on this, you know, like, can you find me a sound effect of a dog barking in the distance, or, you know, tires peeling out, or mm-hmm. see what you can do, make this, because we're going to have to do visual effects on this shot. Can you see what you can make it do? You know, I don't have time work on these visual effects. So can you do that in your, as he likes to say, copious free time?
Yes.
Which is sort of a joke because it's not tons of free time.
Asking you to do a visual effect?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not super common. I mean, there's a handful of episodes mm-hmm. we worked on where there's just an effect or, you know, on stage they'll say they'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they're planned and
yeah.
they call up us and say, you know, can we do a visual effect on this? And we're like, yes, you can.
Nope.
For instance, how many do we have this week? Okay. Yes, one more.
We had an episode. I think it's already aired, so I can talk about it. Molly, the lead, is happens to have a hemorrhoid pillow, basically a big donut-shaped thing, and she throws it, and it happens to go onto her stepdad's hand. And mm-hmm. it's sort of like, oh my gosh, we could never do that again if we tried. And smash cut to her, like, looking in a mirror, throwing it behind her while he's spinning around on a rolly chair with a plunger on his head. Like, they just went the entire way. And so they got the one where she just threw it onto his hand.
Yeah.
And he went, oh. But the other way was we had to do visual effects on that. So he's like, well, we have all these shots of her going like this behind her back, and we have all these shots of the pillow going onto his plunger, which is attached to his head.
Oh, yeah.
See what you can do. And, you know, I basically did a very rough thing, but it looked halfway decent, I'm not going to lie, or pat myself on the back too much. And then it went to our post-production facility, and they made it look a lot more clean and smooth than I did, because mine was it wasn't rough, but it wasn't.
Polished arable.
It wasn't arable.
Yeah, sure.
So that's just something. Or, hey, they're in a car and they go over a speed bump or something like that. Can you find a sound effect of a car driving and speeding up and boom, boom, going over the speed bump? So things like that. Or can you give me options of the speed bump? Or can you give me options of mm-hmm. the engine? Something like that. Or I'll pick them.
Mm-hmm.
Or have them ready for me in 10 minutes when I'm going to walk in your door and go, okay, closing my eyes, listening. That sounds right. Mm-hmm. Do that.
Is there a lot of intense deadlines with that? Because, and maybe that was something else, but I'm going to be in 10 minutes. Find these effects for me or find this audio for me. Does that happen a lot or is it a little more laid back or what?
I guess I put words in his mouth by saying 10 minutes, but I mean, this is just the actual.
But he'll be like, I'm going to come in shortly.
Yeah.
Give me some options.
But the thing I've found out is like if he says, yeah, I'll be in an hour and I know it'll take me half an hour to do, I'm not going to wait half an hour to do it. I'll just start it right away. And then half an hour, he'll say, is that ready yet? And I'll say, sure is.
Sounds like a good work ethic there.
Now, Ryan, I don't want you to get any ideas. Being like, Jeff, that video that you started a month and a half ago, can you have it ready in 2 minutes? Because I want to come in and look at it. I'll just be like, no. Nope.
I'm just very ambiguous. I'm like, Jeff, we need this in the future.
I'll be in to look at it.
Guess when that might be.
Walk away.
Yeah.
Which
meant yesterday, actually.
Yes, ironically. Yeah. We go back in time.
There are a little sometimes intense deadlines because we shoot our show in front of an audience. So we actually shoot it fairly linear, actually. Mm-hmm. Or we shoot from the beginning to the end. So an audience sitting there for 3 hours will have an understanding of where the characters are going in this episode. But we do sometimes, or pretty much every episode, shoot something the day before. Mm-hmm. For instance, if there's a stunt or a hemorrhoid ring toss behind the back onto a plunger.
These are all just generic examples, mind you. These aren't specific.
Exterior sets. I'm imagining you don't. If you do have some exterior,
since I've been there, we've not gone outside, but we'll shoot scenes that take place outside. Just on our soundstage, we'll shoot.
Oh, okay.
Them. We haven't had anything that necessitated, I think, going outside.
Okay.
So, for instance, the hypothetical ring toss that actually happened. That was shot on like a Tuesday, mm-hmm. and then Wednesday at 6:30, our audience came in, and that wasn't the first scene, but I had to have it ready. Mm-hmm. So I basically, I think I loaded the footage that Tuesday night and he was cutting it on a Wednesday. I don't remember exactly what day I did. I knew I'd have to do it at some point. I don't remember if I did it on Tuesday or Wednesday, but it had to be done within basically 24 hours.
Oh, sure.
Which, you know, it's one shot. It wasn't that complicated. I think it took me, there wasn't all the things that were going perfect. Maybe it took me an hour of work that I was doing, mm-hmm. but there was other things obviously happening at the same time. I was going back and forth. Mm-hmm. So there are often time crunches, and another example, we shot an episode for Christmas this season that I think it shot about 10 days before we actually aired it, so we had to put it into fast forward mode, mm-hmm. on
get it done
on our to-do list, and we took care of it and got it locked and sent it off, and it mm-hmm. aired on time, and I watched it with my family.
Really so weird.
Do you get to watch a lot of, because you said you bring the footage as they're shooting it? Are you waiting and then, you know, all right, here's a whatever hard drive canister if it's film, whatever. Take it. Is that what's happening? Like,
yeah, I could go down to stage, you know, if I had nothing to do really, and but my job doesn't take place on the stage, so it's pointless really for me to be there, be mm-hmm. in people's way. Obviously would stay out of their way, but it's literally pointless for me to go there.
Should be standing on the soundstage.
You're not there like, come on, give me it. Come on.
You can do better, Melissa,
hey,
come on.
Hey, are you done with that tape yet? Because I really need that tape right now.
You walk up to the director, you're like, you know, I don't think that really worked. That didn't work for me. They're like,
I'm not going
to
be able to edit
Excuse
that.
Excuse me, sir.
Move
who
over.
Are you?
Give me the bullhorn.
Yeah.
I'll yell cut. Yes. I need that tape.
We do have a feed that goes from our cameras to our offices. So.
Oh, I suppose you have technology.
So
sure.
I can see what's happening. And
then are you, how do they film? Are they filming on film or are you recording back in your office?
They're shooting tapeless now. We just moved this season. We're shooting on media cards. We have S-by-S card, and then we have like a backup system as well. Mm-hmm. And plug them in the computer, and I'm transcoding them. We use Avid.
Okay.
And I'm bringing them in, and I'm syncing them and grouping them. And
for Avid, are you going to DNxHD? Are you doing ProRes? Or
yeah, we're doing DNxHD and the lowest one, 36. We have a shared file storage, a Unity that I have on my computer, and he can get it in his office as well. We can be working on the same project at once.
And that's for a proxy edit? You're just editing with a proxy?
Yeah. It's not broadcast mm-hmm. Quality or anything like that, but it's good enough for sending out a cut, whether digitally or on mm-hmm. a DVD or something like that.
Do you now? Who handles the onlining and finishing? Is that would that be you or?
I prep all the material that goes to our video house's Technicolor. Uh-huh. Is Technicolor.
And it doesn't work when you say the name and then cover up your voice.
You got to say something else. Is Random Company.
It's it's in the credits anyway. They do all the color correction, or I guess first they do the tape. They bring all the footage in, and it's all high res. And
So onlining.
Do the online.
They do the online. Yes.
Yeah,
I do that.
So they'll do the online and color.
And we're bringing in VFX from a couple different companies, and and then we also send it. We mix our audio at Warner Brothers, and they'll mix it all and sweeten it and make sure everything's golden. And then this is not really anything I do, but I do know, since I've worked in post-production in other capacities, that you know our people are there and they're listening to all the audio, making sure it is good, and they're watching all the video frames. They're sort of supervising when the color correction guy is going through, mm-hmm. or at least coming in and watching the final pass, and they're at the mix. Our producers are at the mix, and then they'll lay back the audio on. They have so many tracks. It's like 16 or something.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's like 5.1, and then they were doing music and sound effects on different ones, and LT and RT, left total, right total. Making sure it's all golden, and they're making their dubs and shipping it off to the network after it's all been quality checked, QC'd. Mm-hmm. So,
and is this happening every week, pretty much? Is it a 22 episode, 24 episode?
Yeah, we have 22, and it's not every week. We don't shoot every week. Sometimes there's a week off, a hiatus week.
Okay,
and we didn't simply have air dates for a long time, so we weren't locking these episodes.
Oh yeah,
but we don't lock them the day before they air. It's at least a week before.
Mm-hmm. Don't pull a South Park where it has to be done and ready to go in like 2 hours before it's aired.
Watch out for the power outage.
Yeah. Sucks.
And then do you pick up work when they go on break, or is that time for you just you're like taking off of work and enjoying yourself?
It's sort of...
it's not close enough. Okay.
Sometimes you want to work more. Sometimes because you've worked so much. A lot of people, they'll work 12, 16-hour days for 5 days a week, late Fridays, early Mondays, and they, if the show goes on hiatus for 3 months, they want to use it to rest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, they'll look at their own finances. This last summer, I happened to work on a different show in between because the timing was right. It was a shorter season, and I was able to finish out my work there and still come back. And it was – so that was nice to continue to work and make television.
Yeah. Do you get to do any creative work out there where you do get to edit? Obviously when you're doing a lot of that professionally, like you said, you might just want to be away from it and do something else, but do you do any short films or anything like that?
Yeah, I've had, just because you work with people and you talk or you work in editorial and they know that you want to, be an editor, they'll come to you and say, I have a project I filmed and I have no money. Do you want to edit? Mm-hmm. And I'll say, oh, I'll give you the script or something like that, or how long is this short or something like that. And I'll sort of, if I'm not working, it's not that hard to say yes. And if I am working, it's not that hard to say no. So I've worked on a few things and nothing longer than like 4 or 5 minutes. There was one thing that was a little bit longer, like 9 minutes, but it was sort of a short pilot. No like short films or anything like that on the side, but a lot of this independent stuff, and people do it with friends. I've helped, and then I've had to help out on set as well, or I've wanted to help out on set. A couple of my friends wrote sort of a sketch show, like an SNL light sort of thing, and they, they said, hey, we're filming it these 2 days on the weekend, if you want to help. And then I had already been asked to edit it as well. so I edited that and put that together and did all the graphics and music and everything
We put it in. Yeah. Now, do you want to do TV?
That was my question.
Film or YouTube? It's kind of a little bit different. A lot of the same, a little bit different type of thing. Like, do you have aspirations for any of those, or are you just ready for anything?
Yeah, really ready for anything is sort of where I'm at. Sorry.
It's the air. It's the sea level.
Yeah, really ready for anything is sort of where I'm at. Like, I'm very happy where I am now, and I've happened to work in television a lot just because I've met a lot of the people working in television. Mm-hmm. But and not that I'm, like, bored with it or anything, and oh, I want to do feature films or or I want to write and direct my own stuff
right,
like that.
Right.
But I'm not really going to turn down anything if the opportunity is right. I will say when I was – before I moved to L.A., I had worked – when I was in school, we edited some commercials because we would just get footage for that was professionally shot that my professor was able to borrow from a friend of his that worked in commercials or anything like
oh,
that.
Oh, sure, sure.
And I liked short form a lot because you were – there's a little less rules. Like, you don't have to – to get someone from the kitchen to the car pulling out of the garage, you don't have to show every step when sort of – in television or in a feature, you'd have to sort of show those if it was, if there was things happening. But you could just like go into the store, and then all of a sudden they're driving down the road or something like that. In commercials and short form, it's like that. And I mean, and also, you know, a lot of the things I've edited for friends or with friends, we've put them on like YouTube or like Funny or Die or something like that, and just trying to get notoriety or views there.
It's a great story. I was here the entire time.
Before we wrap up here, do you do a movie voice by chance? Can you do a movie voice? Because we've invented a game. We haven't perfected it, so it could go horribly awry.
It's going to go terrible, but it was awesome.
But it's fun.
I could try. Okay. Jeff and I are former high school announcement.
That's true.
Buddies.
That's all the cred you need for this game. It's very awesome. Little, the bar for entry.
Yeah, we're not. We don't. Yeah.
So this is the movie voice off,
okay,
as we call it.
Love this
and
part.
It's kind of a round robin. And what you want to do is you say a phrase to forward the story.
Okay.
And you're kind of trying to throw the next person off. You want them to lose. last time we did it, we didn't make it very far. Yeah. Just because it's pretty funny and you don't know what to do.
This all came out of just you and I messing around.
Movie trailer
voice. We actually
voice,
did
right?
this.
Yeah, movie trailer voice.
Movie trailer voice guy voice.
He does it a lot voice. Better than I do, but I can make stuff that just.
Are we
clockwise?
Counterclockwise?
We'll do, what is this? Counter?
Yes.
Let's do counter.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to get a clock out.
So I'm trying to throw him off.
Hang on, where's my watch? Yeah.
You could start, probably.
Okay, I can start.
You're always good at
but
that.
Yeah, you just want to do maybe a phrase. Try not to make it two phrases or two different ideas. Try to, you know, one kind of leading to the next thing.
Perfect.
So I guess I'll kind of go ahead.
This
and
is how we
off.
End the show.
One day in a land far away,
there was a spiky hedgehog running away.
He didn't know whether to go or to leave.
But he brought his friend, the can opener. Now, this wasn't an ordinary can opener.
No, it had secret powers.
Like unopening cans.
And the power to destroy human nature. But let's focus on closing cans again.
His name was Porcupine.
Wait, was that the name of the hedgehog
or the can opener? Okay.
Who were apparently one and the same. Twist ending.
See, now we don't know how to score it because that didn't make sense, but you broke, so. Everyone wins.
I love that one. That's a tie. That one was a tie for the episode.
I feel like the guest on each episode is always the one who will lose this.
Yeah. Because we've at least been doing it for a couple weeks.
That was fun, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for playing.
I enjoyed that.
So much fun.
Are you on the internet? Do you Twitter? Do you have Facebook where you want people to check you out or look you up?
If you follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you will be very disappointed. But
I love disappointment.
I had to take a picture of you for Instagram. Like, I tagged you in a photo on my account just so that you were doing something.
You can follow me on Joseph Olton, which is my full name without the F because the PH at the end of Joseph makes the F sound. But I could plug the Twitter
That's awesome.
Account that I've created because it's football related and we've talked about football on the show.
Oh, yeah.
My friends and I were watching football and went, how do these guys stay on the air? They say the stupidest stuff. So we've created, it's NFL Announcer. It's at NFL Announcer. Oh. And it's basically things people say are stupid, like there was a guy who said, welcome to the game between the Green Bay Packers and the Carolina Hurricanes, which the Hurricanes is the hockey team in Carolina, not the football team. It's literally the first thing he said on the broadcast.
The Hurricanes are not a foosball player.
They don't know how to get that ball the into the court.
And I was like, you rehearsed this all morning, and then you just first thing, and I was like, probably as a teleprompter, going to watch the Packer game.
This all right, summer. Basically, well, anytime I watch sports. Joseph Olted, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Hey, Joe.
And thank you so
look
much.
Forward to having you back again, sir.
Yes.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to coming back at some point in the future.
So, how to LA for us?
You got it.
Cheers. Bye.